It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter, brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, the outdoor voice of not only Chicago, but all of America. As we roll into that time of the year when there just isn't enough time, yesterday clicked over into October, and that means that for those of us who love the outdoors, so many of you do, we're now in a hurry to get things done before the ground turns hard and the water becomes something you don't boat on, but you walk on, and the migratory bird season ends. So I promised you last week I'd be doing this show on a remote location, and I am. I am in one of the most famous waterfowl regions of all the world. Actually, it's one of the great heritage marshes of the world. I am in the Bear River Marshes in the Wasatch Mountains of Utah, where the duck season and goose season opened yesterday. And it is one of the epic places in all the world to see bird life. It's not just about ducks and geese. It's about swans and cranes, shorebirds and avocets. Of course, avocets are a shorebird. But there is a concentration of birds in the Bear River Marshes of northern Utah that is unlike any to be found anywhere else in North America. And so for the past several years, I have opened what is the American waterfowl season on the Bear River Marshes, not so much from the point of view of shooting ducks, but from the point of view of just seeing one of the great spectacles of nature. And of course, it's still warm out west, believe it or not, and we therefore swat mosquitoes and have all kinds of insect hatches that only a marsh, such as the Great Salt Lake, can produce. But we think of great places in the world to North America in which to watch birds, and we think of the Mississippi Flyway, and we think of Canada, and we think of wonderful legacy properties up and down the Atlantic Flyway. We don't often think of the Bear River Marshes, and that's partially because so few people have hunted there over time, and they were, in the scheme of America, they were discovered much later than the great marshes of the Illinois River, which, of course, were being plied by market hunters as early as the 1850s. Truckloads of birds were being sent to market from the Illinois River and Louisiana marshes, and, of course, the Chesapeake is world famous. But today, in 2016, if one wants to see just an astounding migration of birds, all kinds of birds dependent on wetlands, there are two great places in America to go. One is the Great Salt Lake, and the other is the Central Valley of California. And ironically, many of the birds that pass through the Great Salt Lake end up wintering in the Central Valley of California. So yesterday, when the season opened and the sun came up and it shone on the backside of the Wasatch Mountains and reflected back to the east, it was as though you were in this cathedral of incredible beauty, with listening to sandhill cranes and hearing the whooping of swans and the quacking of ducks, and watching avocets literally by the thousands come in and out and play in the shallows around your decoy. And then, of course, the incessant buzzing of gnats. Without a hard frost yet in Utah, the gnats are as prolific as they were. It could ever have possibly have been. And despite mosquito netting and some people smoking cigars just to keep them away, they indeed are a distraction, but it's all part of the magnificence of what is this great, great gathering of water birds on the Great Salt Lake. So that's where I am this morning as I prepare for day two of what is for me the North American waterfowl season. And I'll be headed to Canada next week, where I'll do a show from, I will be doing a show from one of the most remote places that you can go still. I'll be in north central Manitoba, high on the marshes of Lake Winnipegosis, where I will be with the world's largest gathering of redheads. And it'll also be a gathering of individuals who care passionately about the future of waterfowl, as we're holding a summit on the future of waterfowl management and how we can do things more effectively. And I should say, it's not only a show that I look forward to doing, but it's also a meeting that could have profound importance in the future of waterfowl and wetlands management in America. But for this morning, in the Bear River Marshes, I'm going to take you to a very interesting study that was just completed that is a study that, for the first time ever, captured via remote photography the nesting success of canvasbacks, or the lack of nesting success of canvasbacks. And with webcams and still cameras, we were able, and trail cameras, the Delta Waterfowl Foundation has completed the most comprehensive study ever done on nesting birds, in this case, canvasbacks. And what they found is really a confirmation of what's been suspected for a long time. And that is that the raccoon, which is non-native to the prairies, and I need to emphasize the word non-native for all of you who love animals, and I love animals too, we have reached a point where the impacts of man, that's us, has so altered the landscape that it is not possible for nesting waterfowl and shorebirds and groundbirds to have the kind of nest success they need to build their population substantially under ideal habitat conditions. In this epic study done on canvasbacks, 40% of the predated nests were predated by raccoons. Nearly half of the nests taken were taken by animals that waterfowl did not evolve with through the millenniums, but which in the last 50 to 60 years have become the single greatest predator on nesting waterfowl. And it is no wonder that with even all the habitat efforts that are going on, nest success continues to be so far below anything that the researchers who carry out this kind of work in the 1940s and 50s ever expected. We are down to something like 5 to 7% nest success rate for mallards. We are seeing canvasback nest success rate that is in the 20% area. And this is almost entirely due to predators who were not native to the region in which these animals, in which these birds nest. Raccoons took 40% of the nests of canvasback. Mink, which is certainly a native species, took 4%. Canids, which are coyotes and fox, took 9%. Now, coyotes and fox are native to the prairies of North America, but they're not native in the kind of numbers that we have today. Red fox was at the very bottom of the canid food chain because wolves were at the top. Wolves kept the coyotes in check, and the coyotes kept the fox in check. Well, the wolves are gone. So now the coyotes, which have exploded in populations, do keep the fox down. But 9% of the predators were taken by fox and coyotes, which have disproportionately high numbers. And 13% were taken by avian predators. Of the avian predators, the biggest predator are crows and ravens, neither of which were at all abundant in North and South Dakota and Montana and Iowa and Saskatchewan and Manitoba and Alberta prior to the arrival of man and our planting of lots of trees. So here we are trying to save a species of birds, waterfowl, which is important not only from an economic basis, but it's important from a societal basis as generations of people have gone to hunt these birds and view these birds. And they are the canary in the coal mine, because proverbial coal mine, because without wetlands, we don't have waterfowl. And billions of dollars have been spent trying to solve this problem. And yet right before our eyes, we know what the problem now is. It is predators, and it is the unnatural abundance of predators. And yet there is no courage within the conservation community other than the Delta Waterfowl Foundation to address this head on. The Delta Waterfowl Foundation is the only organization carrying out an active program to manage predators. Fish and Wildlife Service has a program in the Dakotas, but it's based upon an individual effort by the regional director of that area, not a wholesale across the program. Ducks Unlimited has zero interest in managing predators. In fact, they have been an obstacle to the work of the Delta Waterfowl Foundation in trying to get a handle on how to effectively increase waterfowl populations. Ducks Unlimited, for all the good work they do, and they do wonderful work, does not recognize, or has failed at least so far, to be a part of the equation of reducing the predator population on the prairies, which will be the key to increasing waterfowl populations. And once again, we are finding now irrefutable that raccoons, a non-native predator to the prairies, are the number one predator on nesting shorebirds, songbirds, upland birds, waterfowl. I'll be back with more on the Great Outdoors Show in just a moment. And when I do, I want to talk about drones. And then as we close in on the election, of course, I have to talk about the election because the presidential candidates are not talking about conservation. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720. WGN.
Winter is here and it's always tough on the road, but when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. It's Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and I hope you're enjoying the show and certainly will enjoy the coming weeks in the Great Outdoors as we roll through fall. I want to move quickly to a subject which we're going to have a lot more in the coming years, and that is the subject of drones. They are going to change the way the world is run in many exists in many ways. But in the case of wildlife management, they could radically and much for the better make research more reliable and give us a better understanding of the habitat movements of birds, the nest success, habitat movements of animals and birds, the nest success of birds, the habitat conditions. They are going to fundamentally change for the better the way we understand wildlife. And one of the things that just came out, again done by the Delta Waterfowl Foundation, which is on the cutting edge, it seems, of these breakthroughs on waterfowl management, is that using sensors to detect heat emitted by birds, drones can find the nests of waterfowl. In fact, they can find the nests of songbirds as small as little sparrows. Drones hovering over the ground are now able to fly over the prairies, detecting nests of birds where we have not been able to do so before. The primary method of detecting nests of birds to do surveys has been to run two ATV, all-terrain vehicles, with a chain between them over the landscape, and the chain with cans on it, and the weight of the chain rattles along the ground and flushes hens from their nest. And when a hen flushes, they stop the ATVs, they go over, they try to find the nest, mark the eggs, figure out what it was, and move on. Now, with the aid of a drone, we are able to find nests from the air. They're marked with GPS coordinates. There's no running around in four-wheelers and potentially harming nests, any of that stuff. Now, with a drone, we mark it with a GPS coordinate, and a researcher goes right to that spot, to that foot. There's the nest. Can mark the nest. We're not leaving the human trail that we did before. It is absolutely a profound change that's coming. And due to the work of the Delta Waterfowl Foundation this summer, we have a quick glimpse as to what might be able to be done in the coming years. And it's going to change the way we monitor everything from elephants to the smallest of birds and perhaps even butterflies. So technology and conservation are going to team up here in a very significant way to do some wonderful things in the coming years. I'd like to switch for a little bit to the presidential election and the vacuum that exists with both candidates and their seeming interest in the outdoors. It is astonishing, and it is actually horrifying that here we are in 2016 with a populace that is so well tuned in to events that are in the outdoors that we have two presidential candidates who haven't even mentioned the word conservation, hunting, fishing. And I happen to know through relationships I have that Donald Trump has two sons who are very engaged in the outdoors. They love to hunt. They love to fish. They've done a number of television programs. And from what I understand, they are very, very active in conservation. And it may just be that in this environment, we just rate too low, that the quality of life in the outdoors doesn't matter compared to everything else that's being discussed. But I, for one, and I'm sure almost all of you listening, in fact, I'll say all of you listening to the Great Outdoor Show all these years, share the view that the quality of life in America starts with a quality of a healthy environment and a quality of an outdoor lifestyle. You can't have a good quality of life if your rivers are so polluted with nitrogen that you can't swim in them, and that you have the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico, which is now about the size of Connecticut, and you have the city of Des Moines having to shut down its water treatment plant because of the huge nitrogen loads coming in down the rivers. Quality of life is we all know it's quality of water, it's quality of air. It's what we can do outside. And in the Chicago area, you've been reading now for weeks about the effort to make the Chicago River swimmable again, and all these efforts to have canoes and boating activities on the waterways. And that is absolutely fantastic, because at the end of the day, we are a people that likes to be outside. Sure, we like the creature comforts of inside, but we love a walk along the lakeshore in Chicago, or we love taking a hike along the trails of the Des Plaines River, or moving out to Starved Rock, or if you're living in other areas of the country, listening to the show this morning, you all have places where you go outside, even if for a few minutes, just to have some peace and solitude and tranquility. And yet, we have two individuals running for president. They may have advisors who care about the outdoors, but it's pretty clear that right now, it's not on the radar screen, and that's really sad. It's actually the least amount that the conservation movement has been talked about in any presidential campaign that I can recall. And I've been involved, as many of you know, in a number of them in recent years, advising individuals who are running for president, working on policy matters that incoming administrations would have, working with senators and working with congressmen to try to have conservation practices as part of our mainstream life. But we got to talk about them. When 100 million people are watching a debate, wouldn't it be great if one of the candidates said, you know, one of my priorities is to make sure that our great outdoor traditions in America continue, and we're going to work on our nitrogen loads in our rivers, and we're going to figure out ways to improve the quality of our environment, not through a bunch of regulation and tying farmers' hands and telling them things they can't do, but through trying to use technology and find ways which are win-win for carbon sequestration and for improving soil quality and for improving water, reducing pesticide runoffs into our streams, reducing, of course, the nitrogen load, which is the number one factor, which come from us every bit as much as they come from cattle, as they come from agriculture. Those are the kind of things that we want to do and should be doing, but we have to talk about them. So in the coming couple of shows left before the election, we are going to talk about them. And hopefully, whoever is elected president, we will have a discussion and a platform that moves America forward, because I know the Congress is very interested in Paul Ryan, head of the House of Representatives, Speaker of the House, is extremely interested in these matters, as are others. So we're not going to go silent just because it seems as though we've been pushed aside. There are too many of us, and we care too much, and it's far too important for the future of America. I'll be back next week with more on the Great Outdoors Show. I thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week in the outdoors, and I'll be talking to you next week from the real wilds of northern Manitoba. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.